As a listener of this podcast, you know the devastating impact of narcissistic abuse, how it shatters your confidence, leaving you struggling in future relationships. But it doesn't need to be that way. Join me and experts Lisa Sunny and Rosanna Fay at the Strong and Unstoppable Retreat this October in beautiful Orlando, Florida. During this transformative four-day experience, you'll uncover the unconscious psychological blocks holding your recovery back. Through equine therapy, targeted workshops, and practical skill development, you'll uncover and overcome unconscious obstacles and reconnect with your inner strength. This retreat is specifically designed for women who are committed to their healing and ready to break free from the lingering effects of narcissistic abuse. Space is limited and spots are filling up, so don't miss this opportunity to invest in yourself and your future. Secure your spot by visiting wellnessrecoveryretreats.com. That's wellnessrecoveryretreats. Take your first step towards becoming strong and unstoppable today. Today, Jessica Kent, a huge influencer on YouTube and TikTok, who's best known for her work around prison reform, joins me. Now, she isn't going to talk about her experiences in prison, but rather her experience of being a narcissistic abuse survivor. And if you'd like to learn more about Jessica or her story, please check out her social media pages on YouTube, TikTok, Instagram, and Facebook. I'm going to be sure to put those links in today's show notes. This is Breaking Free from Narcissistic Abuse, and I'm your host, Dr. Carrie Kerr McAvoy, a mental health specialist with over 20 years of counseling experience. Each week, we're going to take a deep dive into the dynamics of narcissistic abuse. As a listener-supported podcast, thank you for considering becoming a subscriber for less than the cost of a cup of coffee. Trigger warning, this episode contains some descriptions of violence and abuse, so please use your discretion when listening. I'm so excited today to be joined by Jessica Kent. I became aware of her a couple months ago when someone was talking about that there's a creator out there talking about prison reform and prison experiences. And my first thought was that orange is the new black. And then when I got to her content, I found out that you are, in a way, sort of like it. That's exactly what you're kind of talking about, what life is like in and out of prison and what you've learned and where you've gotten in your life. As I've thought about having you on, I know that you've had abusive experience for sure, that you've started to identify yourself as a narcissistic abuse survivor. I'd love to hear more about what happened, how you came to that identity, but also what you've learned about relationships. So wherever you want to start.
I met my ex a decade ago, and I knew very little about narcissistic abuse. And keep in mind, I have a bachelor's degree in correctional program support services with an under in psychology. I love mental health. I love just kind of understanding really abnormal psychology. So schizophrenia, antisocial personality disorder. I've read in depth about these things. What makes a person snap? Like, I've always been very interested in that. I still did not really see the flags or the signs. I absolutely ignored them, but he, very charming, Army veteran. We would just sit and talk for hours. And looking back, I now realize I trauma dumped on this man. I told him my story of, you know, having my daughter in prison and being a drug addict. And he, at that point, was about 6 months sober. And we really were just together wanted to build this empire. Together, we wanted to stay sober and stay successful. I was recently released from prison. So I had almost 3 years in recovery to his 6 months. But it was his like discipline and his drive, his ambition that like really got me because I'm the same way. And he kind of told me pretty early on, I'm very distant, cold. You know, I was first on the ground in Iraq. I have a lot of PTSD. And I'm like, wow, he's being so honest. But really, he was laying the groundwork for being exactly what he said, cold and distant and unapologetic. And I remember, we actually have an interview on my channel where he talks about this. He said in one of our first dates that he never apologizes. And I laughed at that. And I'm like, okay, like never? Like, that's weird. I thought he was kidding. He wasn't.
Yeah.
He wasn't kidding. But, you know, I ignored a lot of the red flags because, you know, he's like, okay, you're cold and you're distant. I can be the one to maybe change that. Or I'm not super clingy and I don't want people hanging on me. Like, I don't want to date someone that's going to like grab onto me while I'm straightening my hair. Get off of me. So I'm like, this actually works. I don't need a lot. He doesn't have a lot to give in terms of like intimacy and like the touchy-feely stuff. I don't want you to hold my hand in public. You know, I always was annoyed when I see couples like holding hands through doorways. Like, let go.
Right.
So I'm like, this is amazing. It's perfect.
Isn't it amazing, though, how they tell on themselves like that? Because mine said on the first day, I don't need anyone.
Yep.
And I didn't take it literally either. I'm thinking, oh, well, but you'll need me, you know?
Right. And we hear these things and we internalize them and we make it completely different. They didn't say that, but yeah. We're thinking something else, or we want it to be that, you know? So yeah, I got pregnant with our daughter 2 years in, and that was really the first sign that I had seen him just not have any empathy. Like right after our daughter was born, and it was a very fast delivery and very pain-free. It was just incredible, very different from having my first daughter incarcerated. He said, I'm so glad she came out quickly, because I don't think I could have stood here and like cheer-led for 12 hours like some people said I'd have to. And I'm like, bruh, I just made a human for you.
Wow.
Like, here's your human that looks exactly like you. I made her with my body. I'm now going to keep her alive with my body, but you can't stand here and cheerlead for me. And it just cut like a knife, you know? And there were little things throughout 10 years that that just made me feel just drained. I got no help around the house. Slowly, we became more and more successful. I graduated with my bachelor's degree in 2020, so no graduation for me. You know, it was just one of those things where I didn't celebrate my own things. He never celebrated me, so I was just kind of silently, you know, becoming more popular on social media. I was getting my degree, raising our kids, and he was in turn working on his career and doing very, very well, becoming very successful. So as a team, at the height of his career and mine, we had about $500,000 coming into the house a year. One year, it was near the end, I was walking past him and I had my 1099, and I'm like, I hate filing taxes. It's the bane of my existence. He sees it and he's like, oh, did you get your 1099? And I'm like, yeah. He goes, let me see it. The fear that I had, and like, these are little things over time, especially with financial abuse, but I'm like, I'm terrified to tell him that I made, you know, like almost $350,000, because I do his taxes and I know he didn't make that. And I hand it to him and he's like, good job. I'm proud of you. And I'm like, I've never made this much money in 1 year. Like, I am so proud of myself. And I have to hide it, you know, and it just got worse and worse. And in February of 2022, he relapsed on cocaine. And that's where the mask, he couldn't hold it up anymore. He couldn't even, you know, take digs at me and pretend that it's a joke. He couldn't do all these slight little, very covert things that people slam me for on the internet. They're like, oh, really? That's so sad. Like, I know how he is. So he became even more emotionally abusive. He revved up that silent treatment, disappearing for days at a time. He got physically violent towards me. And it was always because I caught him doing something. There was one, and I shared like body cam footage and Ring doorbell footage in this docuseries I did. But there was one incident where I just opened his traffic ticket. Everything, of course, is in his name. So it comes in the mail and it has his name on it. But I don't know if it's for my car or for his car. So I just open it, and I had found out that he was not where he was supposed to be. In the middle of the night, probably buying drugs. And I questioned him about it, and he was so mad that it just got crazy. He threw me across the room, and it got really, really bad at the end.
As I'm listening to you, I noticed a couple of things. One is that you didn't pick up on the fact that it was a lot of coercive control, a lot of ambient abuse that I'm hearing. And that for you, it just felt like this is normal. That level of unsafety was normal. You didn't pick up on that. Looking back, and I'm hoping and assuming you've had safe experiences someplace in your life, why do you think you missed it? That, because like you said, it is easy to mine, by the way, was a lot of coercive control too. So if I describe it, you're like, okay, so you guys worked all day and you didn't eat till 5 o'clock. Well, a lot of people do that. Or yeah, he woke you up, but it sounds like you guys had business to do. So maybe that's just the way life was supposed to run. You don't realize this person's literally running you ragged and controlling all these important facets of your life, even to the point that you didn't feel safe talking about your income. So what do you think led you not seeing that wasn't good?
So I have severe ADHD that has gotten progressively worse over time, but I am so bad at paying bills on time. I'm so bad at remembering them. I hate doing it. I don't want to balance a checkbook. I hate it. You know, I don't like an Excel spreadsheet. And he knew that. So when we first met, we both had the same job, same income. He moved into my home because he was staying with a family member at the time. So he didn't even have a home. Moved into my apartment and everything was in my name. I had my own car, no car payment. I had a lease, my own phone. All of that was just, all the bills were in my name. And slowly over time, as we became more successful, he got new phones. I'm like, oh, cool. I would love a new iPhone and I'll pay the bill. I'll give you cash. So the system that we had in place, very slowly starting with cell phones, which I could ramble about why not to do that for an hour, but I just gave him money. I paid cash for everything. And it was phones. And then it was a car. Then it was our home that we bought together, VA home loan. So I'm not on the mortgage, wasn't on the deed. I just paid cash.
Oh, no.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
Oh.
So, and then eventually my 2020 Jeep Grand Cherokee that I upgraded to a 2021 Jeep Grand Cherokee, all in his name. He never paid a dime for it. And at the end, he had cops come to my door several times to repo that vehicle. And he won it in a family court battle.
And it's amazing how they'll position themselves at the time like, well, this is just simpler. Or, why wouldn't you trust me? Or we don't need to hassle with that.
I mean, so bad at paying bills. Like, let me take care of it. You don't want to have a late payment. So there'd be a few things in my name, like a credit card here or there. And there was one time I remember a few years ago, I'm with my girlfriend and the kids and him were in the car on the way to a restaurant. And it pops up on my car, who's calling? It's Credit One. And you know, if they're calling, you missed a payment. And I was like,
yeah.
So he's like, oh, you missed a payment. It was 20 minutes in the car of him like kind of berating me and making jokes about how I missed a credit card payment. So when I tell you, I thought I couldn't do anything by myself, let alone have a bill in my name. I mean that. And it started so slowly. I was paralyzed to make decisions, afraid to pick curtains that he might not like. And it wasn't like he would just scream at me or fly off the handle. He would just make me feel like a freaking idiot. And I didn't want to deal with that. I wanted him to be proud of me. I wanted him to, not make fun of me for having ADHD and being a basket case with laundry or random things.
It's amazing how they pick up on those things. They pick up where you're insecure and they begin to work at that. Mm-hmm. Now, one of the things that mine did was really subtle is that I have a lot of body image issues. I have had my entire life. I've never been, in my opinion, skinny or thin. So he would walk into a store and then look at the box dresses that are most ugly, kind of like, you know, maternal, and then say, what do you think of this one in front of everybody? Or then he'd say, do you carry in front of loudly? Do you carry extra large in a country that has tiny little small people? And I'm just like, oh, I want to die. I just want to die. You know, they just kind of work away at this. And you don't know, because sometimes it's positioned so sweet, like looking out for your ADHD, you know? For me, we were living in another country that was very machismo. It was Mexico. And so he would say, you know, the men pay for things. I look bad not having any credit card and not paying for things. So how about we just go to a cash system? So I put in an envelope and we just pay for cash. Well, guess what would happen? The cash would go missing.
But it sounds good.
I know. And I would never think to get the receipt. So I'm sure if I did, I'd find out that every month I'm losing thousands of pay. Oh, I did, but I had no awareness that he was siphoning stuff off for his own purposes. Was there an event that made you think something's really wrong here?
There were a lot of little moments, even in the first year, that I'm like, this kind of makes me really sad. Or like, you know, I'm going to bed crying. He's snoring next to me. I'm trying to cry as quietly as possible. I'm like, just suck it up. You know, gaslighting myself. Like, it wasn't even that serious. And every single time we'd get into an argument, it would be about like housework before the relapse or something. I'm like, hey, every 6 months, I had a mental breakdown. I'm like, hey, I need your help with housework because this is a 4,000 square foot house. I'm one person and I work 60 hours a week. And he's like, well, I work too. I'll just do my own laundry. I'll use one plate, one spoon, one fork, one cup. I'm like, that's cute. We have kids though. So if you could just help out, I'll pay someone to come in twice a week. I'm like, I work here though. Like, just do the fucking laundry, dude. Mm-hmm. He sent me a good morning. I'm sorry about last night. Love you text. That was as much as we ever talked about any kind of argument that we had. I'd cry about it at night. It's hours of silent treatment, swollen eyes, can't film now the next day. I spend the whole day just upset and trying to power through. I have two kids to take care of and dogs and a household to run. I have to make dinner. So I'm just like, just try not to look like the pile of trash you feel like right now. Try to get dressed, try to put a little makeup on, power through. And I would always get that text. So we never really worked on our issues. But the relapse was like, it was so like traumatizing for me to see him that way. I had never seen him high before that because, you know, I had seen him drink a little bit here and there. I would drink here and there. Never really saw anything in excess. He never drank and drove, never did any drinking and driving. He knows that is like my one thing where like, I will fight you. I'll fight a stranger on the sidewalk to get their keys away from them. I don't want anyone drinking and driving. Oh, he used that later too. He'd always like grab the keys and try to run out the door, like hammer drunk, and then be like, she's trying to keep me here. Mm-hmm. Like, no, I'm trying to make sure you don't hurt yourself or someone else. I was just very, very scared at the relapse. It was the moment where I'm like, oh, I've gotten a lot of other people sober. Again, me trying to power through, I can help him. It was 10 months of me still being in our home and him, you know, coming and going. He'd be gone for a week or two, come back. I knew I had to get out, but it was just mentally, it was like so hard for me. And I had the money to leave. We had separate bank accounts and things like that, but it was still so hard. You know, I thought if I leave, he's going to get worse. He's going to die. I can't turn my back on him. All the things he's done to me, it's because of his addiction. Mm-hmm. And then I just had this moment where I flew to LA to film on the set with Jubilee. And it was an incredible girls' weekend that I had. I had three amazing women around me that have experienced a lot of this. And I remember my friend's mom telling me, I know you don't want to leave because you love him. You have to love your kids more. You have to protect them right now. You have to get them out of that house. And it just clicked. And I flew home the next day and got a storage unit and got as much stuff in storage while the kids were in school as I possibly could. And I stayed in a motel with them for 2 months before I bought my first house by myself. But it was such a huge shift.
Somebody else made this point. It just got asked on another podcast interview. Isn't it one of these big moments that caused the change to break? And it's, no, it's not. I hear amazingly horrible stories, and it usually is something subtle, just like that experience of that mom coming alongside of you and saying, listen, you have to be thinking of other people. It's not just you that you're in trouble. And interestingly enough, it was my kids that also got me out as well. I thought to myself, would I ever want anyone to treat one of my sons like this? Absolutely not. And then my next follow-up question was,
it's horrifying to think that.
Oh, I know. And my next thought was, if it's not okay for them, then why is it okay for you? And I had never thought to ask myself that question before, because one of the things I picked up on as I'm listening to you, and I think it was true for me as well, and I have a feeling that you and I have very different backgrounds, but also in some ways extremely similar, is that you were being psychologically, emotionally starved, and you didn't know it. That not only was this person controlling your environment, making it wear you out, wear you down, taking advantage of you, it running you to your extreme end where you were being exhausted, but they didn't see you. He wasn't like loving and being compassionate to you, and that you were literally starving to death, living on bread and water emotionally. And it wasn't until somebody like this woman coming in and saying, listen, I know you're a great mom, but she also, in a way, she was giving you what you weren't getting, somebody seeing you and then responding to their concern of what they were witnessing.
Yeah, it took me a long time to realize that Reese did not see me. He doesn't know me. Mm-hmm. I know everything about him because I would listen to his stories. And I'm very good at the little things, you know, like getting little gifts that he needs. And I'm very intuitive when it comes to things like that. And I can feel energy and I pick up on a lot of that. But he did not see me. He does not know me. And that is just soul crushing to me because I loved him more than I have ever loved before to that point when I left. I just wanted that to work so bad. And I wanted him to be someone that he just isn't. And when I finally realized, like, my children are growing up in a cycle of abuse, they don't even see their dad cook, clean, help me, love me, like hug me, hold me, cuddle, none of that. And now they're seeing abusive behaviors because he is in active addiction. If I don't leave right now, then my kids are going to grow up thinking it's okay, it's normal, and if you get treated that way, stay. Now they know if you're treated that way, the response is to leave because I set that example and I left. And I have goosebumps thinking about it. Like, it was so hard. And now the funny thing is, I'm in a new relationship with a man that wants to spend time with me, genuinely wants to spend time with me. And he wants to cuddle and love on me. And he doesn't get mad if I make a mess or if I'm wearing no makeup or the kids make a mess. He doesn't care at all. He's like, oh, it looks like you guys had fun today. I had just recently organized my pantry, and that's always a disaster when you like take all the, you know, take the cardboard out to replace it with plastic containers. It's something crazy that we do. And there's just this pile of boxes.
I saw that video. Yeah. I loved it. It's beautiful, by the way. Thank I love the chain.
But I was like, oh my God, I have to clean all this up because he's going to be done with his live stream soon. And then I'm like, I don't. When he walked in, I don't even think he saw it right away. He's like, okay, cool. Mm-hmm. Look at all the snacks. And that's the difference. You know, it's the not walking around on eggshells. I didn't know how emotionally starved I was until I found somebody that loved me the right way. And then it was like, night and day. Like, what do you mean you want to spend time with me? What do you mean you just, you know, you want to cuddle or just love on me and hug me and like watch a movie with me? Like, are you done working yet? I just really want to watch a movie with you. I just really want to hang out with you. And I want to hang out with him too, but it's so different. I look at him sometimes and I'm like, are you messing with me? Were you sent by someone? No way. No way could it be this fun.
Yeah, I love that. So you said it was super hard to get out. One of the things I hear that made it hard was your sense of responsibility for him, that you felt a lot of guilt. And that's common. A lot of people feel very guilty about leaving their partner, that you were feeling guilty, like you were leaving him in a bad spot. And they're very good at hitting us at that level and making us feel like they're depending on us or that they're going to harm themselves or something bad's going to happen. I'm assuming that was what made it hard. Maybe there's other things that made it hard. So how did you get out then?
He never, like, he wasn't the kind of person, toxic person, narcissistic person, whatever you want to say, that would threaten to hurt themselves. Not in like a, okay. not in a verbal way. He would, like, if I was, you know, questioning him about something or I'm trying to hold him accountable, he would immediately, like, he would use my abandonment issues that he created and he would reach for his car keys and his wallet. And he'd always, almost always be drunk when he did that. So now you're triggering my abandonment issues. You're trying to leave me for who even knows how long, and the silent treatment hurts like hell. Now I have to worry about you, check jail rosters and hospitals, and I'm just crazy, can't sleep. And now I'm afraid that, you know, you're drinking and driving, so you're going to hurt somebody else. But he never, like, said, I'm going to hurt you. He's very good at stonewalling, and he's very covert. So instead of just saying, like, I'm going to do this to you, he would just take things. He'd take my wallet. Like, he would do the same thing to me. You know, he'd take my wallet. I didn't take his laptop, but he'd take my wallet, my prescription medication, my laptop, my car keys, and leave me stranded with nothing. And then he would hide my things back in, like, the house or something. So there was one fight we had where he took my laptop from me. That's how I work. It's how I make money, you know? So now you're trying to interfere with my career on top of everything else. And all day, I'm like, God, as soon as he gives me back my stuff, I can go. I can just get the kids and go to a motel. So I'm like, please just give me back my computer. Like, please just give it back to me. He goes, what are you talking about? I don't have your computer. Why would I need your computer? Like, I have my own computer, Jessica. I don't need your computer. And then I asked him again. I'm like, please, like, I know that you took it. Please just give it back to me. He goes, your computer has always been in your possession or in your property or something like that. So I walk away and I'm like, what does that mean though? And I had walked out to my Jeep and the computer was on the floorboard in the passenger seat, that's not where it was. He put it there. And I'm like, oh my God, like, he's trying to make me feel fucking crazy. He's trying to make me feel like I put the laptop there and I started this fight with him for no reason out of the clear blue sky. And it was just 10 months of torture. Like, I just couldn't even, like, think straight. I was exhausted. I couldn't sleep. I had no appetite. I was just in fear. When I did finally leave, it got worse. That's when he stalked me. And I had hotel staff, very good people that were picking up on this. I had hotel staff write a statement for me and then get the security camera footage, because in the middle of the night, one night after he assaulted me by holding me hostage, almost naked in our bathroom and strangling me, in the middle of the night, he tried to get into my hotel room. And when you hear that, that's scary enough. But when you see it on the security camera footage, it's even more like terrifying. They gave me that so I could go to law enforcement and get an order of protection. That was November of 2022. Yeah. I did not get an order of protection until January of 2023.
Wow. Yep. You know, it's interesting because people are like, well, if it's that bad, just leave. And yet leaving is one of the most dangerous times for victims because, like you even said, your person was pretty covert. It was coercive. It was all the subtle stuff. And yet when you were trying to leave, and of course they were also using, but it really, it really ramped up and became something completely different. And you did become greatly at risk. It's wow.
I think that wow. he couldn't fathom the idea of me leaving just to leave. He believed, I think, I'm just guessing, that I was with another man and that's why I left. Because there's no way I would just leave to just, because I don't want to be with him. There had to be someone else. Yeah. So he was essentially stalking the hotel, trying to catch me with someone. It's just me and our kids. It was just such a scary time to even be in that hotel because the kids were like, why can't we go home? Why are we here? And they were, you know, they're little. They're about to be 12 and 8. So it was just very scary for them. They didn't get it. I barely got it. There were so many nights where I was just up. Just I couldn't sleep in the hotel. I was watching my baby sleep. And I had the lock on the door, like both locks on the door. And I was just watching out the window, paranoid that he was just driving by or like trying to come by. Like, what is he going to do? He was ultimately convicted of assaulting me for a minor assault that happened in March of 2023. But the very severe hostage situation where I was strangled, which I found out recently that if you're strangled as badly as I was, you could suffer days later from that. Like there's like long-term issues with strangulation and it's terrifying. But he wasn't charged with that. I went in and I filed the report and I'm like, no, I don't want you to tell him I'm here. I don't want to press charges. I just want it documented in case he tries to take me to family court. Because, you know, this very, very intelligent, very covert man, he knows like if I take away everything she loves, then I'm going to get my revenge. And that could come, you know, that's my car, my kids. Just whatever he could possibly think of to destroy or take away from me. So I was like, you can have whatever you want. You're not taking my babies from me. So I knew enough and I had a couple of friends warn me of that. I knew to get it documented at least, because if you go to a family court and you tell the judge like, hey, I'm in an abusive situation and it's been going on for a long time. Can we at least get supervised visitation or something? And the judge is like, well, where is the proof of any of that? Is there any documentation for that? Or are you just telling me for the first time? And you know, I was in family court for over a year, spent tons and tons of money all to be told, because you're always told in family court, just be adults and get along. Oh my God. You know, it's not about what you went through with your ex. It's not about any of that stuff. It's not about whether they're safe even, you know, it's about you made this human, these humans, and you have a legal and moral responsibility to, you know, be adults and get along well enough to exchange kids and take care of kids. So that's a whole new set of trauma and financial abuse.
Oh, I know. I know. So it becomes another wing, another arm of abuse for them. Well, this has been really rich. I appreciate you sharing your story so much. I know that your life is fascinating on lots of levels, but this is tough. It's tough partly because it's so hidden. Everyone around you doesn't know what you're going through, that you've been surviving something really awful, and that it erodes your self-esteem so profoundly. So thank you so much for trusting us with that. So where could people find you if they want to find out more about you and check out your material? Where can they find you on social media?
Yep. So I'm on every platform. It's just my name, Jessica Kent. And then on TikTok and Instagram, it's JessKent12.
We're going to jump over now to do the podcast extra. It's made a powerful comment about not being able to really show up as yourself and now having a relationship where you feel seen and learning how to kind of enjoy that. I want to talk about that transition, like what that's been like for you to move into that new place and what you've discovered. So for those of you who'd like to hear this, be sure to consider becoming a subscriber for our podcast extra. So thank you so much, Jessica. This has been wonderful. I really enjoyed it.
Of course. Thank you for having me.
Well, that's a wrap for this week's episode. Are you following me on TikTok, Facebook, Instagram, and YouTube? Find me at Carrie McAvoy, PhD. And whether you're in, consider leaving, or have left a narcissistic relationship, find community support at my Toxic Free Relationship Club. You can learn about this resource as well as others at CarrieMcAvoyPhD.com. And I'll see you back here next week.